Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and I'm really excited today because we have Jack, otherwise known as Sicarius, on the show. Jack is one of the traders I've wanted to talk to most for this project. He's just an outstanding trader. I really like some of the philosophies he uses to invest fundamentally. We split this episode into two parts, so make sure you listen to both. It just got pretty in-depth. We talked for almost an hour and a half, so I've split it into two parts to make that a little bit easier to consume for everybody. If you like this, please give us a rating on iTunes or your podcast app, whatever you use. We do appreciate those, especially if you can give us a full-on review with iTunes. That helps other people find the show, and we like that. Hey, this episode is brought to you by Delta. The Delta Portfolio app is fantastic. Go to ledgerstatus.com/delta. It's what I use to track three different portfolios, and I have Exchange Sync built into it as well. It's super, super good. You got to try it to know, and then I think that you will be convinced, and you won't go back to whatever you may have used before. If you already use Delta, they also have Delta Pro that adds awesome features. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the show, but let's get right to it. Hello and welcome to a new episode of LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and today we have one of my favorite traders, Sicarius, or your first name is Jack. So, hey, Jack.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm really pleased to have you on. So you've been trading crypto for quite a long time. When did you get involved?
So I bought my first Bitcoin in December 2013, about a week after getting married and about a few days before China banned Bitcoin and it dropped $500. So
yeah, I was about to say people will hear December 2013 and they'll be like, wow, he got in on the bottom, but that was a local top, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was pretty much the, I got in at $1,000. So I was a member of the four digit club for a while there, like so the next, two, 3 years?
Yeah. In 2013, you were the equivalent of buying Bitcoin at a 2017, you know, 15K plus.
Yep. And I mean, I bought it because I ran across it and it looked kind of interesting. And I started getting on our Bitcoin. And Reddit told me it was going to 10K, so it seemed like a good time to buy.
That's awesome. From a fervor standpoint and the way people were talking about things, the way the environment felt, did it feel similar to 2017 or was it more or less hyped? How did you, looking back on it, how did you compare?
It's hard to answer only because in 2013, and really this is to my own shame, I did so little research. I wanted to buy when it was at 400, right before we got married, but my soon-to-be wife said, well, let's look at it when we get, you know, through the wedding and honeymoon and all that. So I got back and it was $600 higher and I purely bought off of FOMO. I was like, man, it already went up $600. Gonna go higher. This is unstoppable. So, you know, comparing that to 2017, where I was so plugged in to the markets and the sentiment, really hard to compare. I guess one aspect where it was similar is in 2017 when we broke out to new all-time highs and did the, you know, the whole run up to 20K, similar to back when I first bought in 2013. When you're in that all-time high zone, it's really different dynamic than any other type of price action, because any other type of price action, you can look above and you can say, okay, well, there's some obvious resistance here at 8K or 10K or, you know, 14, 15K. Whereas then in early 17, the sky really was the limit. Where is the top? I had no idea. And so that really gives you that FOMO and that hopium. You start thinking about, at the time, 10K, and then in 2017, start thinking about, you know, 50K and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I guess that's one of the advantages that you have once you've created an all-time high and backed off of it is actually now we have some pretty clear trading zones between now and the next time we break an all-time high. And I've got a weekly chart pulled up that you may be able to see, but it's not too important for people that are just listening. But, you know, there were a couple of years really until, I guess, when did we break the prior high? Like March of 2017. So from when you bought your first Bitcoin in 2013 until, or maybe I'm looking at the wrong. No, that's right. Yeah. So until several years there where we didn't break a prior all-time high and you were able to establish those trading ranges. Did you get your feet wet doing technical analysis in that zone, or what was your journey like in trying to figure out how to trade these markets?
It probably took me until, look at your chart here.
I've got some funky stuff on here right now. So
oh, good. Hope people. It took me about until mid 2015 on that consolidation range we had down there in the $300 zone.
Yeah.
When I really started to actually dedicate myself to learn to trading between when I bought in at 2013 and basically the bottom of the dump, I was doing altcoins. I dabbled in margin trading. That went very poorly on OK Casino. And really what I was doing, even with like my altcoin buys, for a large percentage of them were just buying off of Twitter calls of other people. The whole, you know, getting the crypto, try and get rich quick, not doing any work. So, and I mean, the alt market was really booming back then. I mean, there were a lot of scams and stuff, but there was a lot. That's when you had a lot of 10x, 100x stuff. So, you know, I'd get lucky and I'd pull like a 25x because I had horrible risk management. And then I made a ton of money. Yeah. And then I'd spend the next like 3 months, you know, bleeding all of that off, buying the top, selling the bottom, that sort of thing. Yeah, so in that probably spring of 2015, I decided I was either going to really buckle down and learn to trade, or I was going to give up on crypto because I was clearly wasting my time and wasting money. And I was a pretty bad employee at the time too because I was so focused on crypto. So mm-hmm. I was like, I either need to focus on crypto and become not the best, but the best I can be at this, or I need to give up on this and actually focus on productive things. So that's when I really started to dig into TA and fundamental analysis and doing my own work in the space.
Did it feel as crowded then in terms of all the junk and scams? Like I've heard from you and, I'm local here with Crypto Messiah and we've talked about this, how it didn't necessarily feel at the time, I wasn't involved, but like according to people, it's like, didn't feel less insane. You know, like it still felt insane and full of scams, like you said, and maybe they were even more blatant, or you potentially could lose even more money or whatever. But like, did it feel smaller, or did it still feel crazy and really hard to differentiate between the good stuff and the bad stuff? What was your mindset when you were analyzing projects?
I think it was harder. There's a lot of scams now, yes. You know, a lot of ICOs that are just clear money grabs. With false promises, that sort of thing. But even those, they tend to bleed off. Whereas in 2014 and 15, there was a period of time, I think the summer of 14, where I did not sleep in any altcoin positions. Because you might wake up and the coin would be at zero Satoshis because there was a hidden pre-mine.
Wow.
And I made that decision after being on the receiving end of a hidden pre-mine several times. I think exchanges have gotten a lot better at actually reading. Well, first of all, now most of coins are tokens are ERC-20, so there's not like that hidden pre-mine aspect. There were multiple times where I woke up and I had buy support on the books, so I ate their hidden pre-mine dumps, and my whole stack was now worth nothing.
So you were the buy support, and therefore they were basically just dumping into you.
Yeah, there's one dev who, I forget what coin it was. After he dumped everything, he was like, he posted pictures of himself, you know, on vacation somewhere and just said, pre-mine safely dumped. Thanks for the support.
Wow. That's super rough.
There were a lot of scams. That said, there was also a lot of coins which probably, I mean, they turned out just to be nothing. But that pulled 10x, 20x pumps due to like Twitter calls and stuff beforehand. So wow. I had a lot fewer long-term positions then. I could try and find a coin that, yeah, it's probably a scam, but they're probably going to pump it up to $X thousand market cap before they dump. So I might as well try and ride the pump and then get out.
Do you think those pumps were because coin makers were more brazen, or was it that much more illiquid, or both, in order to get, you know, a multi-X pump? Like, maybe it's just because of the market that we're in right now, but like, I know 2017 had these 50 and 100Xs, but that's not really something you can dream of in an altcoin today, like in 2018 during a downtrend of the whole market.
It was a lot less liquid. I mean, I remember when 100K was like a respectable market cap, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember actually back when Ubic hit $1 million market cap, I was celebrating. That was like a big deal. You know, it was like, oh, we're big leagues now.
Yeah.
Whereas now $1 million market cap is a low cap. So it was right. A lot easier to pump something 50X when the whole market cap was only 10K.
Yeah, pretty much if you're even trading on any reasonable DEX, like you're going to list at 5 to 10 million at least.
Yeah.
Even for an illiquid coin, just because of the... I don't know what that's because of. Maybe because there's on most of these, there's like a billion plus coins on the supply side. So even for these low pennies, low Satoshi coins, like it ends up being a pretty high market cap, or I'm not really sure what the cause is of that. It makes me believe though that the market caps that we have today certainly don't seem like real, you know, because if that supply was utilized, it would... I don't think it would be really worth that. Like if that supply was actually in action, most of that's because that supply is just not being traded or used, right?
Yeah, there've been a couple coins recently that I realized I was bag holding, and I don't like to just hold a coin for hope, you know, just because I got on higher. I mean, I'm perfectly fine selling at a loss if I have no confidence that it's going to go higher. So I was exiting them, and I think it was like at a $70 million market cap, but I had trouble exiting because it was like there's no buy support on this thing because it's such trash.
Yeah.
It just so happened that I was the only guy trying to exit at the time. But if, you know, like you said, if a lot more of the coins are in motion or more people trying to exit, I think some of these market caps would quite quickly really show the
dissipate,
true colors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is happening
to some extent. If you look at the charts,
yeah.
Some of these coins have gone down in market cap from like 150 million down to like 25 million.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not just like, you know, Cryptopia. That's stuff that's on Bittrex for sure, Poloniex, and I think even some of the Binance coins, like the books are pretty thin on them, at least in terms of relative to their market cap. So like, you need a larger book to support a larger market cap. So if we've got larger market caps across the board, you need more supportive books for those.
Definitely.
So how has trading changed for you? Like, you've been in this for years. I think a lot of people just assume like, oh, they never had it tough. They bought early and held for years and it's no problem. Now they're rich. How has it changed, and what kind of new challenges are you finding yourself facing?
Risk management has, the longer I'm in the space, the more that becomes important to me. Mm. And then also, you know, in the early days, I just got into Bitcoin as a way to cover the cost of my honeymoon.
Retroactively.
And then became more of a hobby. And then I actually, you know, started like getting involved in the community and reading the Bitcoin white paper and the tech and stuff, and got interested in it in that aspect. And then I started to see other traders that I looked up to and respected making actual life-changing amounts of money. And that's kind of when I thought, you know, this could be more. I could actually make a go at this full-time. And so I'm full-time now, and that's when it really, some of these drawdowns that I experienced in earlier this year, you know, after that run to 20K, yeah. I'd look at my daily drawdown, and like percentage wise, it was maybe fine, like within my risk management bounds. But I was like, I'm not comfortable with having this many zeros in a drawdown on one day.
Yeah. When you're looking at pure dollar basis.
Yeah. So risk management, it's an evolving thing. Depending on your lifestyle, on the market at the time, how big your stack is, you know, I don't think there's any specific percentage like this much fiat, this much long term, this much short term. that is kind of a one-size-fits-all. I think there's definitely good places to start there, but as you evolve and mature as a trader, then you'll know when your risk management needs to be adjusted.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that boat. Like, I had this point where, and you know, people should know, I came into this in 2017, so like my average price per Bitcoin was significantly higher than some, and I even missed a lot of the last spring and summer runs. But even still, just that really large altcoin run from a USD basis that we had December and January. Even though my Bitcoin balance was overall fine, you know, like the drawdowns from the tops of those altcoin runs weren't that bad, the US dollar was like stomach wrenching, you know, the drawdown that I took. And I realized after the fact, like, wow, this was horrible risk management that, based on my experience in traditional markets for a long time, like, I never would have let that live. And for some reason, I talked myself into not believing in the dollar value, or not caring as much in the dollar value, which was, looking back, insane. So you in 2017 were talking about a dollar focus. I think you even had it in your Twitter profile.
Yeah.
How many months did you have that in there, and like, what led you to realize that was a necessary thing to focus on?
So about the time we broke 10K, I realized, one, that I really liked doing what I do, and that more than making a specific amount of money or having a specific amount of Bitcoin, the thing that mattered most to me is no longer working for somebody else, no longer having a 9 to 5 day job.
And when did you make that transition, to give us a little extra context?
Oh yeah, January 2017, I was actually let go. Okay. Not because I was trading too much, but because my company had to cut 25% of the staff.
Okay.
So I was also let go, and I spent about a month looking for jobs. But I was also trading full time at the time, and it got to the point where I that's when the 2017 run really started heating up for Bitcoin and alts. So, you know, I would submit a job application and hope I didn't hear back. And about that point, I was like, okay, I need to talk with my wife and tell her we're going full time. So then I'd planned to go full time in the future, but my target for that was like early 2018. So I was kind of pushed into it a year early, but the market conditions really lined up for me. So that was nice.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens sometimes. When I went from a traditional engineering background to doing web stuff, which is where my background is, it was the same. Like, I was like, I'm not going to be ready to do this, because I was teaching myself, I'm not going to be ready to do this for a year or two. And then all of a sudden I saw this job opportunity that I couldn't miss. And I was just like, oh, well, I guess I'll apply. And a week later I found myself in a new industry. So right. timing in life is not always of our own making, but it's obviously worked out for you. I'd like to take a quick break to thank Delta for partnering with us for this episode. Delta is a fantastic portfolio tracking application. You know, I've been trying out their beta, which may be released by the time this is out, but I don't think quite yet. It will be out very soon. And the visual changes and functionality changes both in this release are really fantastic. I think that you will be very pleased with some of the new options that you have to view your portfolio differently. And in new ways that include some social elements that I think you'll really like. I know I'll like that for tracking the 100X Challenge portfolio. My 100X Challenge portfolio may be down, but my way of tracking how I'm doing is just fine. The Delta app is so good. It's on desktop. It's on your mobile phone, whether you use Windows or if you use Mac devices, or if your phone is an Android. It works on every single one of them. And hey, you know, you can upgrade to Delta Pro for just a small yearly fee, and it just adds functionality to all of those things. Delta is really fantastic. You have to try it to know just how good it is. So I hope that you'll go to leisurestatus.com/delta to try it for free. That's leisurestatus.com/delta to try it for free. We are very thankful for them to be a Leisure Status partner. And just give Delta a shot. We know you'll love it. And here we are, back to the show. So you started taking it seriously it breaks 10K and you find yourself on this mentality that you have a dollar focus. So what got you there?
Yeah, it was just, let me look at your chart here.
Yeah, and for people listening along, I've just got a weekly chart of Bitcoin so that we can kind of line up Jack's life events with Bitcoin's parabolic growth.
So it was just that I mentioned in late 13 and same as early 17, there weren't clear resistance lines because we were in this new all-time high territory. And I was actually really uncomfortable trading that market. I liked it because, you know, we just went up every day. So that was nice. But as far as like actively scalping or trading it, I didn't realize how much I relied on previous levels to do that. And so I had no idea how high we were going. I didn't know if we were going to stop at 10K. I didn't know if we were going up to 50K. So I had a lot of stuff locked up in alts and pre-sales at the time. This was actually really nice because I know for a fact I would have sold too many of my Bitcoin too far lower. But I would have those coins come live. It was almost like they were spaced every week or every couple weeks. I'd have another investment from months ago come live where it was liquid. And so that gave me the opportunity to kind of keep on cashing it out on the way up. And because I didn't know where the top was, but I knew I was happy with this price level, I just stair-stepped out. Every week I would sell a little more, assuming, you know, I wouldn't try and like, you know, sell the very bottom of support or something. But assuming we're going parabolic at the moment and it was kind of leveling out, I would just sell a little bit every week. So,
yeah. Another thing that I noticed last year, and I was putting in new fiat. So I was trying to, I was basically doing the opposite of you. So when we had these dips, like really you couldn't guarantee that like, oh, this is, you know, this parabola is going to break and the fun is over. We're going to enter a bear market, except for the fervor of like, there'd be a level where you think this is going to go to a prior high and then it just can't even get $500 to $1,000 to that level. The reversal candle was so severe. So for me, I was like trying to time, get some fiat onto an exchange and then prepare so that when the time is right, like maybe I can nail this pullback, which was really hard to do. And I think that was, to me, the difference that gave me confidence that we were going back up. We were gonna retest whatever we just dropped off of. But, you know, so were you doing that in those earlier stages? Because like in the summer, it was, I don't remember exactly, it was Bitcoin Cash stuff, and then it was China stuff, I think, in September. So were you selling on the highs, or were you literally just every week making those moves?
So let's see, earlier on, we had that drop in summer of 17, that dropped to about 1,800.
Yeah. I remember because by the time my fiat came in, it was, I think, like 2,800 already.
I bought that pretty hard. That was the first time I'd felt scared for quite a while. You know, I was full-time in the markets, and I'd cashed out some at the new all-time highs at the time, but not a ton. And we went down from, it's like 25 down to 18 pretty aggressively.
Yeah, 2,900. Yeah,
yeah. And so I started feeling scared, but that was, it was kind of nice. I was able to like step out of myself and say, "Well, you know, markets take money from people who are emotionally stable, or sorry, they take it from people who are emotional and give it to those who are emotionally stable and able to actually step out of, you know, the chaos of the moment and analyze what's going on." So I kind of used myself as a buy signal there, which worked out really well. And then again at 3K, same thing sort of happened. I hadn't really learned the lesson from before, and I still had bad risk management. And so I was scared again at 3K. but I used that again, and I bought in with the extra fiat I had and then on some low leverage margin. And then it was pretty aggressively up till about...
Let's see. It was a down week in November, around Halloween. I remember in that 6 and 7K range.
Yeah,
And then you can't even see it on a weekly chart, but it was funny because I don't know if you remember the whipsaw around 10K, where on a daily basis, we just went like into the 10K as a roof line, and then we just popped so hard down off of it and then destroyed it on the outside. It was crazy. I mean, and the reason I'm bringing up all of this is because I want people to understand that, like, someone that's been around a while and seen this stuff, you still don't know when, like, the cycle is ending. But obviously, to some degree, you found a place where you realized this is not going to stay this way.
I've been in crypto for 5 years, I guess more like 4.5, which, given the age of the space, is, I mean, a decent amount of time. I've been in longer than a lot of people. Mm-hmm. have a good bit of experience in it. But that said, as far as, like, if you look at, you know, traditional trading or financials, financial markets, 4 years of experience, two of which are pretty much gambling and not actually trying to learn, is not a lot of experience. And right. While how the crypto markets react and feel, I think there's a definite advantage to having specific experience in that regarding stuff like risk management and sticking to your trading rules, the psychology of that. And that carries over to any markets. So going up in 2017, I was still very much a noob and was evolving and maturing the whole way up. So, like, with these, you know, hit 3K, went down to 1800. I bought 1800 pretty heavily. I took a lot of that back off at 3K because I thought it might be double top. I didn't know. And I was, you know, scared from having so much drawdown earlier. Did the same thing around 5K. Then when it started just going parabolic, between like 11 and 20K, what was that? 15K, it spiked down pretty hard before it headed back up. It started getting really volatile up there, and my daily drawdowns, once, like I said earlier, I wasn't comfortable with that. And so that's when I really realized I have way more than I expected to have this year, or basically any time this early in my trading career. Yeah. I'm going to secure this to secure my ability to trade full time in the future. So that's really when I switched to that dollar focus. And I was still making more Bitcoin every week from either trading altcoins or trading on OKCoin or BitMEX. And so usually what I would make that week, I would just pull off into dollars, at least half of it. Mm. Then we had that really drastic sell-off down to like 10K, 50% drop again.
Yeah, but it happened in like, I'm on a daily now, so it happened in like less than a week. We went from the top at 20 to it got bought up just under 11K. But that was extremely high velocity.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people that kind of woke them up, that markets don't just go up. And drawdown's a real thing, and it's not just about the money that you're losing. It's mentally, you know, back there at 1800 and 3K. Well, those are pretty obvious buy spots, but when you're down to 50% on your whole portfolio, it can be hard. It can be really hard to buy your own blood. So you'll trade a lot better if you're using that risk management. You have less on the table, and you can be rational about the moves the market's making. I think it's Crypto Orca, who mentioned to me once, which in retrospect is really obvious, but I was doing this for the previous 3 years. He said, you don't always have, or he said, you shouldn't trade with all your funds. Like, for the first 3 years of my trading, 100% of my funds were at risk, so to speak. They were on the table in a position. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't give you a lot of flexibility either monetarily to take advantage of moves that come up that are, if it's a really good setup, you don't have any liquidity, you can't jump in and take advantage of that. Doesn't give you a lot of flexibility mentally either, as far as being able to stomach drawdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So
after, and that applies both to fiat and Bitcoin, right? So being 100% in alts doesn't let you make any moves in alts. You're just preying on the momentum.
So now I keep at least 25% of my crypto portfolio in fiat, just so I can take advantage of those really obvious setups. When you see panic on the chart, you see people capitulating, and it's a really obvious setup to jump in and grab that 20%. I keep it in fiat because at this point in my trading, my exposure to Bitcoin is as high as I kind of want it to be right now. Back, you know, earlier, before the 2016 halving, my only goal was to stack Bitcoin. I didn't really care about the price. I was trading alt solely for Bitcoin because I knew we had this large bullish catalyst coming up.
Right.
And I knew I wanted an X number of Bitcoin for that bullish catalyst. And there's people today who have, I'm sure, have the same mindset, which is totally fine. But you just want to be true to whatever your strategy is. There's, back when Bitcoin was pushing north of 15K, there was a lot of talk about, do you trade in dollar basis? Do you trade in Bitcoin basis? Which one is right?
Yeah.
Can you say you've made money if you buy an altcoin and it goes up in dollar but down in Bitcoin? I mean, I said it at the time, and I'll say it again. It gets back to what your goalposts were when you got in the trade. You know, I don't think I lost money if I take dollars and I see an altcoin that I'm assured is going to go up 20%. I don't know what Bitcoin's going to do. So I buy into the altcoin. Bitcoin goes up more, and I lost dollars compared to if I'd bought Bitcoin. Well, the fact remains, I wasn't as confident in Bitcoin going up as I was in this altcoin. I made my altcoin play. I made my dollars. I'm perfectly comfortable with that. That said, if you get into an altcoin trying to make more Bitcoin, and you make dollars and lose Bitcoin, you're lying to yourself if you move those goalposts and say, oh, well, I made dollars, so it's all good. It just gets back to what your goal for the trade is.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice. And I think a lot of people, especially when we're in a bull run, they would have said, well, I just want to make Bitcoin because Bitcoin's going to go up. And as you come back to terms with reality and you see trends shifting and Bitcoin's not, you know, not going up all the time. We're very clearly in a bear market now, and you can see that we need a whole new momentum push if we're going to try to return to any form of bullish momentum. That said, like, there was a secondary alt season, which, if you weren't paying attention to dollar values, you just wouldn't have seen, because it was dollar values on these altcoins that was relative to Bitcoin, not necessarily as big. And I think what you're talking about of like being comfortable having made that money in US dollars, you could have missed it if you weren't looking at both. So I've long been an advocate of paying attention to both dollar and Bitcoin charts. And more recently, something I've been doing is also ensuring that I keep myself in check by looking at things in linear and log. Is that something that you've given a lot of thought?
I really don't ever use log charts. I know they have value. I think more often than not, when they're posted on Twitter, they're posted as hopium to kind of fuel people's Bitcoin's going to 100K this year biases. They've just never been my thing, so I only use linear.
Yeah, so I'm on a chart now that I think people would be really upset if the two of us didn't talk about it. As I think I got into it because I first heard about it from you, but I liked the project. I interviewed Alex Sturt from the Ubic project. But Ubic is an altcoin, which is a really decent example of this mentality where it went up enormously last spring. And I think you've been involved in it for a long time. But you had to be looking in December and January at the run-up of these altcoins in dollar value. And I'm looking at the Ubic dollar chart right now where it broke up from a dollar, and then it went and broke an all-time high at like $3, and very quickly was like $7 and $8. Were you looking at that and saying like, this just cannot sustain? You know, like this is not the type of thing that you maintain forever.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just Ubik. If you look at...
it's all of them. Yeah, like yeah, Strat, Waves, pretty much everything.
Yeah. Nick Trades has a Telegram channel. Pretty sure it's open and free, where he just posts basically weekly charts of altcoins. And they pretty much all look like this. Mm-hmm. They had those insanely parabolic moves back there in early 2018 or late 17. And yeah, it's not sustainable. So I took a lot of profit on some of my altcoin positions. In retrospect, not as much as I should have.
Yeah, I think people will be glad to hear that you were in the same club and not taking enough.
Oh yeah.
One Greed of my favorites is actually Greed Dash. Yeah, Dash is one of my favorite ones in this perspective, because I remember when it hit $1,500, I was in a grocery store parking lot and I was just thinking how a Dash masternode was worth $1.5 million. And a year before that, it went from like $13 to $1,500 in a year. Something like that. And I knew it was unsustainable, but it's hard to imagine that something can really draw down 75-80%. But that's what we saw. Like, this was what we've seen was obviously something that needed to happen, but it was really difficult to identify. And what I realized after the fact was if I wasn't looking at dollar charts in linear, I would have been in more trouble. Like, I probably would have held on to stuff even more than I did. So I just thought it was worth discussing that. Because there's a lot of people that are in what your shoes were in 2013, right? So like, when you bought high and then you had to live through this tremendous downturn. So I want to know from you, do you have advice for people that are trying to stomach these 70-80% drawdowns, especially relative to the dollar? But I bet a lot of people also lost 50% plus relative to Bitcoin. So do you have any advice for emotionally or otherwise, what people, for other people that might be in these situations?
Well, so what I did in 2013 and really 14, after realizing I bought the top on Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and I was down like 50% in a week, I started digging in and started reading more about Bitcoin and reading more about these altcoins that I was also buying. And the Bitcoin halving was coming up in 2 years. And so I was like, well, I'm clearly suck at trading Bitcoin. And I can try and learn more about this, but there's this very intuitive bullish catalyst coming up for Bitcoin. I'm going to stack Bitcoin until that time and not really worry too much about the price of it. And while I've taken a lot off the crypto markets into fiat this year, with a lot of what I have left, I've already started rebuying for the bottom. I don't know if this is the bottom of Bitcoin. I'm not going to make that call because I don't know. I thought AK was the bottom and I was clearly wrong about that.
Yeah, and for reference, we're around 6,700 today. Yeah. But this is essentially the third trip we've made down into this 6 to 7K range.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly where the bottom is, but I'm reasonably assured by the kind of like it was in 2013 or 14, by the halving in 2 years will be considerably higher than here. So I started cost averaging in and stacking Bitcoin with what I was good at the time. At the time I was only good at being really fast and buying people's Twitter calls. but hey, that was a legitimate strategy.
Whatever someone's edge is, right? Like everybody.
It was a legitimate, yeah, because I was tied to my computer. So now, like, if you're good at trading altcoins or picking out good ICOs or pre-sales, and you are kind of worried about where this Bitcoin bottom is, you know, if you have that good risk management where you can stomach the drawdown without it, you know, putting you out in the streets or whatever, then yeah, take this time to study and learn some TA and learn about market cycles and, you know, try and get better at ascertaining the trend of Bitcoin. But I would suggest just keep on doing what you're good at and stacking Bitcoin for the 20, 20 Havening or the 2019 pre-Havening run-up.
Yeah, and I think it's really good for people to get out of the mentality that, oh, well, I can get rich this year because of whatever. And granted, there was a time in 2017 where if you were ballsy enough and made some good plays, you could have made an incredible amount of money and multiplied your portfolio by many times over. But there are different times for different things. And one of the things we're seeing now is this incredible correlation between Bitcoin and altcoins. And if Bitcoin is going down, altcoins are going down. And this has been the case probably since 11.5, 11.8 double top. Our correlation has been just increasing rapidly. And that was where Bitcoin really... Was it there or was it the first time down? So like off of 11.5 down to the first real dip to 6K. But either way, like...
Yeah, I think it was off of the first that first one.
Yeah, it was because I remember getting stuck pretty pretty distinctly in a couple of positions there. But
yeah,
does your strategy change significantly when those correlations are so strong? So last year, a lot of times the correlation was, most of the time, 2017 and before, the correlation was opposite, right? So like altcoins had runs and rallies when Bitcoin breathed and went down some. We're not seeing that today. So how does your strategy change?
Yeah, that trend has definitely changed. And it's changed back and forth a few times over the years. I think the reason it's correlated now is kind of indicative of that bear market we're in. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in a bull market and Bitcoin goes down, but people are still reasonably sure it's going to go up, well, they want to make more Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So they either buy the dip or they jump back into altcoins to get those quick pumps, get more Bitcoin for when the bull run continues. Now, Bitcoin goes down, people start thinking about, you know, 3K, 2K, 1K. The bubble's busted, it's all over. They want to get out of their altcoins as well. So whenever Bitcoin pumps, it really gives that... just makes people more comfortable in their altcoin positions that, since alts are, you know, one of the reasons alts are paired against Bitcoin, that, oh, everything we're holding isn't going to zero. So yeah, your strategy does have to change based off of what the correlation is at the time. And I mean, that kind of comes back once again to having that flexibility in your risk management and not being 100% in all the time. You can take advantage of these shifts in trend and in momentum.
Monuments crumble.